Welcome on to this week's Hollinger and Duncan, joined by John Hollinger of The Athletic. Like, you don't listen to this every week and you need people to be identified, which clearly is not the case. But we want to get into a show that I thought was really useful for me to do last year, John, which is looking at everyone who might be eligible for veteran extensions, which is one of the biggest ways that guys are getting paid in kind of this post-cap space era that we've been in after 2019. And also, frankly, we can also say the way that guys probably get the worst contracts out there is via extension as well.
Some of the worst ones have been. I mean, obviously the John Wall one stands out, for instance. Although I will say, I think teams, by and large, make better decisions on extensions than they do on free agents because they've had that player in-house. So I think they have a better idea of what they're getting and what the risks are. Certainly, they have a better idea, I think, health-wise of how the player is holding up and where the fail points might be on a multi-year deal. So I there definitely have been mistakes made on veteran extensions. And I think sometimes teams can underestimate the decline of like a mid-tier player in his early 30s, like how quickly that can go south. But at the same time, I think there's more wisdom that just goes into that decision because it's just a less overall emotional decision. Like, it's not driven by the distortions of July 1st and the free-for-all and free agency or any of that. So it's a little more of a calm decision, not made in the fog of war. So I think by and large, the decisions on veteran extensions do tend to be better.
I think I would agree with you, except for the guys at the very top who are eligible for supermax type of contracts. That's where I think it might be a little bit different to me, right? Like, if you say like Patrick Beverley's extension or Robert Covington's extension,
yeah,
those where it's like, all right, you know, we're gonna, or maybe you could say Clint Capella with the Hawks. Not that many of these veteran extensions for older guys are just straight up 4 years, absolute maximum allowable that you can get. Team, and those players are want to mitigate risk as well. They're willing to get paid for maybe two or three more years, kind of at about what they're making. And then, you know, other veteran extensions, you know, to be clear, we're not talking about rookie scale extensions here for those who, you know, that's just a completely different animal for guys coming off of rookie scale contracts, and pretty similar situation for guys who are second round picks or undrafted coming off of minimum contracts who would still be restricted free agents. So really talking about guys who are going to be onto their third contract at a minimum with these extensions. So I think most of those are not too bad, but and we probably haven't even totally hit this yet either. You know, we're just now seeing the end of those first round of supermax contracts with Russell Westbrook, John Wall, Steph Curry, amazingly, that shows you his greatness, that he is still worth that supermax even now. But most guys haven't been, and we're going to see Jimmy Butler, like that's one that where you're like, man, that could be huge. Paul George, maybe Kawhi Leonard. That's kind of the next round of these that are coming through.
And I think the Butler one illustrates, I think, the type of example you're talking about. It's the sort of Damocles extension where you have the 1 year and the player option afterward. So the player can opt out after the season if you don't extend him right away and give him the extra three on top of his player option. You're either risking losing the guy for nothing or having to go really long on him. That one's really hard.
So let's go through here just the rules around veteran extensions. This came in, it was really righted, I think, for the most part by the 2017 CBA after the combination of the extension length reductions, extension amount reductions in terms of the raises you could get off your previous salary from the 2011 CBA when owners were really trying to save themselves with terrible extensions like Steven Jackson and Richard Hamilton under the previous CBA. Now, though, the rules are as follows. A veteran extension can cover 5 total years. That includes the previous contract. So if you have 2 years left on your contract, you can add 3 years. If you have 1 year left in your contract, you can add 4. Also worth noting that the concept of the previous year, that goes all the way until June 30th. So there are guys whose contracts expire on June 30th. They could theoretically still extend right now if they wanted to. That's what Robert Covington actually did. But even if you're on June 29th, that one day counts for a year. So you can only go for 4 years out from there. You also can only extend after the 2-year anniversary of the signing of the contract. Now, that could be, if it was another extension, it could be 2 years after that. And you can only extend a 3- or 4-year contract. If you are extending a 5-year contract, you must wait until the 3rd anniversary of the signing of the contract. And then finally, we're going to talk about different types of extensions here. The designated veteran player extension, that can only be signed during the off season. If you have 2 years left on your contract, that extension may also only be signed during the off season. If you have 1 year left on your contract, you can sign it all the way up until June 30th, in theory. You can start the amount of your new extension at 120% of the previous year's salary and get up to 8% raises. And however, if you are below the estimated average player salary, which will probably be in the $11 million or so range coming into this year, then you can bump up your salary to 120% of that. And so the maximum contract there will probably be about, you know, a 4-year, maybe in the $58, $60 million range, depending on where the estimated average salary comes in. You know, if you're a guy who's making the minimum or something this year, you could start off at that contract. So sorry for that housekeeping, but just a good reminder of what the general rules are around extensions. Now, after that ample preamble, who is the most interesting veteran extension candidate to you once the clock turns past July 1st?
Pascal Siakam.
What's his situation?
So, 2 years left on a deal that pays him pretty well. 35.4 this year, 37.9 in 23-24. He made third team All-NBA. You could go out 3 years with him right now if you're Toronto. I think he's just at an age where that feels a little risky. You might go ahead and let him play out the year and do it again, you know, and come back to him next offseason and say, you know, because then you could add 4, too. I mean, maybe from his perspective, that's actually better, too. And then, right, if he makes third team All-NBA again, he'd be Supermax eligible.
Oof.
I don't know if I'd Supermax him anyway. That's where it's tough, where you have a guy who's Supermax eligible that you actually don't want to be Supermax eligible, right? Like, thank you for voting Julius Randle All-NBA, but we were kind of hoping to keep that number down a little.
Well, so Siakam, you mentioned his age, 28. If he were to sign a 3-year extension that starts in 24-25, so that'd take you through basically his age 33 season, and that would be 3 years, $132.6 million, starting at $40.9 million, going up to $47 million. And now that's based, too, on... Yeah, why is it starting so low? Oh, probably because he would be over the max salary. That's why. So he wouldn't get the 120% raise, because once you bump into the max salary, then you can only... The most you can get is an 8% raise off your last number. And since he actually doesn't have that much experience, that would be the case. So, I mean, that's going to be interesting. What do you think of Pascal Siakam? I wouldn't consider him the 15th best player in the NBA, even if he did make All-NBA this year.
See, I agree with you on that. And that's why I think Toronto's best play on this is to play it out. Because then, I mean, from a risk management perspective, too, you just collect more information with that extra year. Who knows? You might end up wanting to put him in a trade even. So I just think there are more avenues that open up. Like, one of the things, Toronto's always mentioned with Rudy Gobert. Like, would you trade Pascal Siakam for Rudy Gobert? And if that were the case, would you want it, like, if you were Utah, would you rather have him extended or not extended before you did that deal?
Yeah, to me, the thought would be not extended because you can always offer him enough to get him to stay, I would say. And so, like, I wouldn't be worried about that aspect. Like, to me, he's if he's really that good, you can just pay him more than anyone else and get him to stay in theory. And to me, also, I think just where Toronto is as a team right now, I think this is a really interesting year for them. Jake Fisher has talked about, you know, the possibility of maybe OG Anunoby being available. I don't expect him to go anywhere. I don't think Jake does either. But just the possibility that maybe Toronto will be at an inflection point here. Like, they have a nice team. They took a step forward. They still got some young guys, Siakam and Van Vliet, Anunoby. Gary Trent can also be a free agent. So really, their top four guys can either be free agents or have 1 year left on their deal next summer. And then, of course, they've got Scottie Barnes as well. So, hey, if these guys get into the top four in the East next year, all these guys are young enough to take a step forward. Scottie Barnes is looking like a future superstar after winning a Rookie of the Year this year. He takes another step forward. Then you're like, okay, we'll bring these guys back. If not, let's say you're kind of piddling along, maybe you would consider moving Fred VanVleet at the trade deadline, or moving Siakam, or moving Anunoby, and just totally reset with what should be, I mean, all, I think a lot of those guys could get like 2 first-round picks potentially, if not more, in a move. And then you really just start over with Scottie Barnes and just a treasure trove and a great development and scouting crew.
Yeah. I think this is also one of the important things with extensions that I think teams can take a little too lightly at times, is that you're extending into the player's decline phase and you don't really know how that's going to go.
And I don't think Pascal is going to be like a great aging guy personally.
If I was extending for just the 3 years to come, I would say Pascal Siakam might be worth that extension. Like, I'm looking at my numbers now. I have him projected to be worth $44 million this coming year, right?
Right.
So that's a reasonable thing to do. If he was a free agent, you could sign him for 3 years at 40 whatever a pop. You'd
probably even sign him to 4, frankly. I would say. I mean,
the problem is there would be
enough competition.
You have these two years that come in first, and then the 3 years get tacked on to the end of that. So you're paying for his age 30, 31, 32 seasons right now. And that's a box of chocolates. I mean, you don't know exactly what's in there. I would probably leave that one be if I were Toronto. I think it's a really interesting case, but I would say don't extend it. Now, if Siakam for some reason said, you know what, I'll do 35 flat, then right? Then I think you'd go ahead and do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think maybe that's the offer I would consider making, so something along those lines. But yeah, I mean, I'm just not sure what Siakam, I don't know if Siakam is going to be, like, he's kind of a lower end all-star player right now. I think all-NBA, I wouldn't get that far with him. And those sorts of players, you know, 30, 31, and they kind of, all right, $35 million, yeah, maybe with the cap going. That's the other two things in addition we should mention. The new TV deal will likely kick in 25-26. Everyone that I've talked to, I'm sure you feel the same way, John, believes that there's probably going to be cap smoothing, so we don't
get that crazy 2016 bump. Because I've talked to a couple people in the league about this. I haven't pursued this that seriously yet, but that they expect a new TV deal. They expect the money to bump up because of that, but they also expect there to be smoothing this time based on the experience of last time. And so they don't really know yet what the capital implications are going to be of that and what years will be impacted the most. So they're flying blind a little bit on 25-26.
Yeah. Now, my guess would be, you know, we see something like there will still be a bump in the cap on a yearly basis that's beyond what the raises will be on contracts. So I think it's fair to say, hey, we might get at least, you know, a $20 million bump or something like that, which is a much bigger deal back in 2016 than it is now, because, you know, we'll be in the 120s for the cap instead of 90, you know, probably even in the 140s for the cap. My estimate right now was that maybe it'll go up by like $10 million that year or something. That's just my total flying blind guess. But anyway, so then the other thing is, if you extend a guy for longer than 2 new years and give him more than a 5% raise, then he can't be traded for 6 months after signing the contract. If you sign a guy to a designated player veteran extension, then you can't trade him for a year after signing. So that's just something else to think about when we think of these. So my turn here.
Okay.
Domantas Sabonis with the Sacramento Kings. My guess would be probably not, because here's his situation. Makes 19.8 this year, 20.7 next year, then could tack on 3 years, $80.5 million after that. So that'd be 24, 26, 28, basically, that he'd be making each year. I actually, you know, I think that would probably compensate Sabonis fairly for what my conception of his value is. I would probably make that offer as Sacramento. My guess would be he wouldn't be interested in it, that he'd be looking for something north of 30 a year. What do you think?
I think he would turn that down. I think that's a fair offer based on what I think his value would be, you know, mm-hmm. in those seasons. It would be his age 28, 29, 30 seasons. I think that's a fair value. Unless he really values having time off in the months of May and June, he probably won't
get ready for the national team.
Re-up to stay in Sacramento on those terms.
Oh, man. Honestly, if I were advising Sabonis, I would probably tell him to take that. I think his star is going to dim significantly in Sacramento. I don't think they're going to win. He will probably put up some stats, but I think there'll be an understanding maybe of just a continuing to evolve understanding that his skill set doesn't really help you. I think that Miles Turner made him look way better defensively, and that just having him as your center, the idea that you can't have a good defense, I think will be obvious to a lot more people in Sacramento. And hey, 2 years out as well, I mean, that's a long time, right? I mean, I think that we talked about that some with Siakam. Like, who knows what the hell is going to happen in 2 years, right? In 2017, John Wall had led the Wizards to a 49-win season, and he was healthy. And by 2019, he had torn an Achilles, and it was already the worst contract in the NBA before the extension even kicked in.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, for someone like him that I see as kind of sub-all-star, to lock in that sort of money, I would do it. I would advise him to do it. I think there's just a feeling like, hey, I was an all-star. You know, I should be getting 35, 40 million by where the cap is at that point, and I maybe that'll happen, but I would be risk averse enough that I would actually accept that as him.
I will be very surprised if he accepts that.
Me too.
What about, speaking of which, what about Turner? Because he's another interesting case.
Very interesting case, and he's eligible. He makes $18 million this year. He'd be eligible for a four-year, $97 million extension. Miles Turner is
26.
Thank you. Yeah, 26. So that's, so start at age 27 through 30 seasons. Not bad, I would say, right? For him, I think he's got a skill set with his size and shooting that should age pretty well. I think he has a chance. Now, there certainly are health issues as well. I think that might be the biggest reason that I would take this extension if offered. But he also could potentially be a trade candidate as well. This is one, I think it's more kind of due to the situation that the team is in than that. Like, I think this would be a pretty fair deal for him. You know, he's probably kind of along the lines of like where Clint Capella is. Like, you're not going to get into, like, you know, over $25 million a year still, I think, unless you really are like an all-star level of player, and he hasn't shown that yet. So I think this would be a good deal for him, and not a terrible one for the team either. I might consider it. Maybe you would want to get 3 years or a non-guarantee or team option on the end if you're Indiana. What do you think?
I think to get this in ink, Indiana probably does need to offer the full four, because I think this is kind of the lowest possible level that Turner would value himself at a year ahead of free agency, because there is going to be money out there in 23. He might be one of the best free agents out there, depending on who else extends, obviously. I think the 4 year 97 is pretty fair. It takes risk off the table for both sides. The only thing, it handicaps Indiana from trading him during the course of the season, but yeah. I think...
Well, actually, if they did it right at the start of free agency, they could trade him.
Oh, because they would have enough time, but it's 6 months? Is that what it is?
6 months, yeah, 6 months.
So, yeah, I think that is probably the right move for Indy. I would probably take that if I was Miles Turner. I don't know. Maybe he's hoping that he can have a big year without Sabonis there, that he has, I don't know, if he has dreams of post-up glory now, which might alter his perspective. But I think that's a totally fair deal, actually, that 4 years 97 for him.
I think you're right. I like Miles Turner more than most, but it seems like, you know, I have to detach from my view when we're talking about his value that, you know, it doesn't seem like there were, you know, if he really were worth more than this, wouldn't some team have come up with like two first round picks to trade for him already? It doesn't seem like anyone has ever really made that offer necessarily. There were reports that David Griffin offered the number four pick back in 2019 for him, but that was obviously, he had a couple years left on a value contract at that point. Let's see here. There are many other ones that in theory could extend, but we're going to try to stick to the biggest ones here.
And the realistic ones, I'll add.
Yeah.
We're not going to Cristiano Felicio extension scenarios.
Okay, who else interests you here?
Paul George.
Wow. Already?
We're a year too early on him. Yeah. He's going to get interesting next summer. When he has a year and a player option ahead, that's when it'll get interesting. I think you wait this out if you're the Clippers right now. You don't need to do anything. And it's going to be Paul and Kawhi next summer.
Yeah. Who would be extension eligible? And that actually, there's another interesting Clipper. We can kind of go through by team. Ivica Zubac is an interesting one. He's making only 7.5, so he would be eligible for that Josh Richardson, which would be 4 years. You know, we'll eyeball it here at 58 million or so. It might be a little more or less than that.
20% raise on the average salary, is that right?
I'm sorry,
it's a 20% raise on the average salary.
Yes, the estimated average player salary for next year, which we don't exactly know yet,
but we think it'll be around 12. I would think about that. He's still pretty young. He's a good player. It's a franchise that doesn't really give a shit about the luxury tax. So retaining rights to players then just becomes the paramount thing at that point, and just having the assets under your control. So I would think about doing a deal like that for him where maybe the back end contains partials or team options or whatever, but that gives him his money up front. I would think about that for sure.
Yeah. Now, interestingly as well, they also have, let me double check this, they also have a team option on him.
Yes.
And so if they wanted to, they could also just decline that team option and have full bird rights on him and sign him to a new contract. And maybe they could get him for cheaper overall with the idea that, hey, we're declining your 7.5. We're giving you a bump off of that this year that we didn't have to do. And then we can get you for cheaper going out into the future. That might be a thought that they could come to as well. But I think they probably would just rather keep his salary low for this year.
I think because they know their tax team this year, they probably wouldn't do that. That's interesting that you're right. That is an option for them. But I think for them, they probably look to the out years and they say, we don't know how long we're going to run with this thing with Paul and Kawhi. And at that point, we may go nuclear. So I would probably keep that 7.5 year and try to build an extension off of that. Because he's not, his on the open market, like nobody's giving him more than 58 million in the open market next year. Like that would be very unlikely, right? So I think they have this one under control.
Yeah, and actually in a very similar vein to him, sorry to skip around here, but Jakob Poeltl, kind of a similar player to him. He's making 9.4 this year, so basically he'd be eligible for the same type of contract as well. I think Poeltl maybe is a little bit better.
I think he's way better.
Well, I wouldn't say so. Like the free throw thing is kind of a problem if he's actually on a real team that's going to play in the playoffs.
Now that's fair. We haven't seen what happens to him in a postseason environment. In a regular season environment, like he might be the most for regular season basketball, he might be the most underrated player in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he is a top 10 rim protector. And I actually think Zubac is quite underrated in that regard as well. Yeah, Poeltl did play in 2019 in the playoffs, but hasn't obviously made it back since then. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of all these, like, start but maybe don't finish the game centers. Like, he's got a little more mobility, so maybe he would for some teams. But, you know, the range of that sort of player now seems to have been, you know, at one point it was the contract that Poeltl was on before, and now it'll be the contract that Poeltl will be on now,
right? Yeah.
It was a little bit, you know, 11, 12 million a year. You know, it seems like that's kind of the market for him and Zubac, and, you know, you'll get Mitchell Robinson. Maybe he's a little less proven. Robert Williams is better than those guys, but he's also injury prone. He got in the 12 million type of range. So just these traditional centers who are like pretty good, maybe a little bit of two-way ability, solid rim protectors, that seems like kind of the going rate at this point in time.
What about Poeltl extend and trade in a sign and trade for DeAndre Ayton?
Yeah, I mean, that's one that we've talked about. I think it could be interesting. Now, I mean, extend it, once you extend him, then you couldn't trade him unless you only extended him for 2 years and only a 5% raise, which I don't think he would take. But so as the Spurs, would you offer him that full Josh Richardson, the 4 years, call it $58 million?
I think I actually would. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's a good starting center, regardless of what happens in the fourth quarter of playoff games. I think just his value for the first three quarters of those games would justify that salary.
Yeah, I mean, a guy played 29 minutes a game at center last year. You know, I think he, you know, if he's getting set up a little bit more with more spacing, maybe he looks a little bit better on offense as well. So
pretty serious floater game for a big guy. I mean, it's partly because he doesn't want to get fouled, but still, like, he's got some nice touch.
While we're on the Spurs, I highly doubt this will happen. DeJounte Murray eligible for 3 years, $69 million. He probably says no to that, I'm guessing.
No shot at that one. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure that he should, frankly, but I mean, the other thing that he might ask for after next year would be a renegotiate and extend if they still have some cap space.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't I know he made the All-Star team after as an injury replacement. Like, I don't think he's better than the rest of these $20 million a year point guards, like, you know, Van Vliet or something, or what Brunson's going to get. Like, I think he's more in that class than he is really like a level above them, particularly with the shooting limitations.
I tend to agree, although Brunson's going to end up getting paid a lot more than Murray makes right now.
Yeah, Murray finishes up. He's got 16 this year, 17 next year. So that's why he couldn't go up much more unless he's renegotiated and extended. So, yeah, I think he probably turns that down. It wouldn't be insane to me, though. He's also young enough, though, that you might want to just get a 4 or 5 year deal rather than three.
Oh, if you're San Antonio, yeah, that's a good point, too. So, yeah, move it back a year and then, you know, either renegotiate and extend or just let him go all the way through it and do a 5 year max at the end of it.
All right, let's pick another team here. We can go through some of their candidates. Who you want to go to here?
Well, so there's one that I think is interesting because I think it depends a lot on the information they have that we don't have access to, and that is Bogdan Bogdanovic with Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because on paper, he is worth extending at that price, which would be, it's like 20, starts at 21, right? It'd be a 4 year 97 extension, which is maybe a little scary on the out years, but I mean, he's a good, I think by the end of the last season, he was the best sixth man in the league. The problem is you don't know what's left in those knees of his. And so
ever since he hyperextended that knee in like his first month as a Hawk, he's had problems with it.
Exactly. And he was having problems in the playoffs, even in the Miami series. Like, you know, when somebody misses a playoff game with knee soreness, right? Like, that's a little bit of a red flag that there's something pretty serious going on there. He does have the player option next season, so you do have to worry about that a little bit if you're Atlanta. But given the tax situation the Hawks face already, like, that just feels very risky to tack on years onto him right now when you don't know what you're going to be getting from him physically next year, let alone 3-4 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, and you'd be ending up paying him $27 million in his age 34 season if you go the full 4 years. I mean, to me, this one would make a little bit more sense. Would he just be willing to do a two-year extension that wouldn't violate the Melo rule that would still be tradable? That to me, would be more along the lines of something that would make sense here.
Yeah, yeah. Because again, we always look at these extensions and, well, what's the most the team can offer? But you're allowed to obviously extend the guy for less.
Yeah, and he's making 18, so he wouldn't get much of a substantial raise off of that. You know, it'd be something more along the lines of 2 years, $40 million. That's something maybe that they would consider a little bit more. Let's talk about, this is an interesting one here.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah.
So Chris Middleton has a player option for $40 million after next year, makes 38 in the upcoming season. Could in theory opt out and get a 4 year, $196 million extension, give or take what the max is at that point. He'd be right around there, over 10 years of experience at that point. Obviously, you don't want to give him that. I think he's probably even a little overpaid for his production at 37 and then 40. And yes. Now he's essential to them, right? I mean, they have absolutely nobody else with his skill set, and he's decent enough on defense. He can shoot, he can pass, run a little pick and roll. I mean, obviously, we saw what a disaster it was for them offensively without him. Like, he's essential to what they do. But just from a value standpoint, for a team that does have spending limitations, it seems like they're going to bring back Bobby Portis for substantial money for some reason, and that just they are really limited in what they can do. I mean, maybe I think you talk to him about it and maybe see if he would tack on, you know, if he opts out of that player option, would he tack on, like, you know, another year or two? I mean, because Chris Middleton, I think he's 31 right now. Let me confirm that. So you're talking about age 31, 32, 33, 34 type of seasons. Like, there's a feeling like maybe you need to keep this team together. But I also actually, and we got asked about this on a Spotify Live a couple of weeks ago, I might low-key look into possibly trading Chris Middleton.
You have to wonder.
Reset with some depth, some younger guys around Giannis that can take you into, you know, because I'm not sure that Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Giannis, Brooke Lopez, a year older, and some guys, like those, that might not be enough around Giannis. Maybe you do need to take a slight step back, but maybe you recalibrate around him.
I think that's something where they at least need to make the phone calls. See what's out there. I also wonder, like you said, if you could get him to remove that player option year, could you go out 3 years from there and something in the 30s where you lower the tax hit in 23-24? You're almost doing smoothing, basically. And then you have his deal more aligned. You could probably even give him a player option on the end of it, because that player option is probably not going to hurt you, right?
Yeah, because it's going to be a bad enough contract that he's just obviously going to opt in.
right. It's an easy concession to make. But that I think that's an option to look into, just to help them manage what's going to be a tax hit these next, say, 3-4 years with Holiday, Middleton, Giannis.
Yeah, they've also got Brooke Lopez in the last year of his deal. And that's one where, because this is his age 34 season coming up, maybe it's one where, all right, you go into the season, he's looking good, you tack a year or two on Beverly style.
Yeah, the Joe Ingles. You put another year on it. Yeah. I would definitely look at that. But going out, like, he's eligible for 4 years, 75. Like, no. Not doing that.
All right, who are the other, like, big ones that we have to hit here? I mean, we can't make it through, obviously, every single one today, but the ones that we really got to make sure we get to.
Karl-Anthony Towns, Supermax.
Yeah, so the numbers on that one, it wouldn't kick in for 2 years. This is one of those 2 years out ones, which always kind of worry you a little bit.
Yeah.
Just with the amount of stuff that can happen there. I think he's a pretty decent candidate to age well, though, would you say?
Size and shooting ability. I mean, those are historically the two factors that determine career length, basically. So
yeah.
Towns is big and can really shoot. So yeah, I would say your biggest concern is just defensively. Is he ever going to be average?
Yeah, and so Karl-Anthony Towns, this season that it would kick in would be his age 29 season. He just finished up his age 26 season, so that's a little late for something like this. He's also, to me, you know, kind of more of a in the 15 to 20 range right now as a player, not necessarily a top 10 guy when you're talking about, you know, this is super max. This is 35% of the cap, not 30% of the cap. And he's starting at age 29. Maybe you're hoping that the cap raise gets you out of it a little bit, because we're talking about, as the best estimate on the cap as of right now, 4 years, $205 million. So it would start at 46 and finish at 57.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
so
tough.
So, I mean, that probably ends up being a bad contract. On the other hand, I think he's more tradable probably on that than he is just holding things steady. Like, I don't think he's probably not going to want out next year, but maybe he would want out, like, 2 years from now, potentially. I don't know, but then you would still have him under contract. I think as long as he has enough production in the year that he's playing in for his contract, it seems like guys are tradable. So yeah. I think ultimately I probably would make that offer as Minnesota. What about you?
I think so. You might try to do something to soften the last year. You know, make it put in like Horford contingencies, or like our deal with Mike Conley where it was like 50% guaranteed in the last year, but fairly easy for him to make it fully guaranteed. You might do something like that. I think one of the things, like having worked in a small market, you take flight risk off the table when you extend him. And otherwise, I think if you don't do the extension this year, you get to next year, he has 1 year left, his eye starts wandering, it can get difficult at that point.
Or you're stuck giving him the five-year designated player veteran extension after next year if he has another good year. You might be happy to have it only end after four.
That's a good point too. I hadn't considered that one. I was thinking about if he didn't make it, and you were looking at scenarios where your offer wasn't going to be better than any other team's, except for the fifth year. But you're right. You get into a completely different unwelcome scenario because you have to go out the extra year on that designated player now. So yeah, I would go ahead and do this if I was Minnesota. Retaining rights to players in small markets is always the primary thing.
Yeah, I think there's nothing that says in the Supermax rules that it has to start at 35% of the cap, that it has to have full 8% raises, and that it has to be fully guaranteed. None of those things are written in stone. You can negotiate on that. We haven't seen teams actually, you know, do that before. But, you know, like you could, if you wanted to start him at 30% of the cap, like, because part of the value of the designated player veteran extension is just you can go out for longer as well, and you can do it sooner in addition to the additional money you can pay, or maybe you can start it at 35% and hold it flat. Like, there should, to me, Carl Towns, just in terms of what he's actually worth, there should be some room to negotiate there. In reality, perhaps there just won't.
Right. I think that's probably an accurate assessment.
D'Angelo Russell makes $31 million. That's too much for him at this point in time. His playoff performance was not good. I think if I were them, I would probably be looking to trade him. You know,
yes.
Unless there was some number like $20 million he'd be willing to accept, I would not be interested in bringing him back right now. And they also could possibly have cap space next summer. So I think I would not really be making him a significant offer if I were.
Yeah. And those cap scenarios and the flexibility to do stuff before an Anthony Edwards extension kicks in, I think is the reason that you would not do a deal with Malik Beasley either. Like, he could be extended for about $16 million, which I think is roughly what he's worth. But he has a team option, right, in 23-24. Yep. So I think losing that optionality, like, you'd rather have that optionality than bother with, like, hey, we got a fair contract for two more years. Woohoo. So I think you don't do a deal with Beasley yet for that reason.
So there are two guys who are beyond the Supermax now due to their level of experience, but are actually going to be eligible for rather massive extensions. One of them is LeBron James with the LA Lakers. It doesn't really seem like there's momentum to do that at this point, and particularly because of the possibility that he might be able to play with his son. I don't know if he even wants to lock in, and since he's a billionaire now per Forbes, he probably doesn't really need the money.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You wonder if he would try to do just like a 1+1 extension.
Yeah.
But.
And you know, I mean, do the Lakers, are they for sure want to do that?
I would still think about it if I were the Lakers, because I think having him there lets him sell you sell yourself to free agents automatically when you have him there. So I think just the power of that, and LA is a
free agent. But you also have no space to actually
lose some of your space to bring guys in. I mean, you only right now next year the Lakers only have one player guaranteed to be signed, who is Anthony Davis. So they have quite a bit of flexibility, but that flexibility goes away quickly if Davis is making 40 and LeBron is making 48. There's not room for a third max there.
And then the other one that's going to be fascinating is Damian Lillard. And so he goes out 3 years from now still, but he could opt into his player option. and then get a two-year, $107 million extension that he would be eligible for. This is actually only the second year of the four-year Supermax that he signed back in the summer of 2019. He's already extension eligible again to add 2 years on, but he's already scheduled with that player option to make $49 million in the 24-25 season, and Damian Lillard would be 34 in that season. And so for 35 and 36 to add on over 50 million each season, I mean, I wouldn't be too interested in that if I were the Blazers, certainly. I mean, maybe that you could extend him for less than 50 million a season. Maybe he would be interested in that. But I mean, he's not going to be worth 48 million in almost all certainty by the time he's 34. I mean, he would have to be playing at the same level Steph Curry is now, which,
yeah,
you know, I don't know that he ever has in a career.
Yeah. To me, that would be a ridiculous extension. And it would be a sign, I think, that the Blazers are being run by a third party a little bit, let's say.
Well, it's also a sign, perhaps, that they plan on keeping him there forever. But to me, if you ever want to trade him, don't put that extension on there. I think he's exactly. much more tradable without it. And he still has plenty of time left.
Well, that's the other thing. You could still do an extension with him next year, and you'll have a lot more information about what you have, and probably a new owner, too, I would think. I mean, we'll see how this goes, but
now the team's not for sale. It will have to be sold at some point in the future, but it's not for sale right now.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for that clarification. Yeah, that's going to get interesting there.
Suns are interesting as well.
You know, there's another guy. There are two other guys who are extension eligible who you did not mention.
On Portland?
No.
Okay.
John Wall and Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah. We could throw Eric Bledsoe in there, too, actually.
Eric Bledsoe of Portland. Yeah, I presume they will decline his guarantee. Westbrook, in all seriousness, like, because you could do an extension below the mat, like, you could extend him for 2 years, $30 million if you were the Lakers. Like, you, or maybe if you weren't the Lakers, if you were his next team. Like,
well, I mean, I guess maybe the thing to think about that hasn't really come up yet is there a number they could get to with him if he opted out of his player option? Like, would they, I don't think they would or should do this, but like, would they say, okay, opt out of $47 million and we'll sign you to 2 years, $60 million? And that, would that, let's see, would that give them enough that room takes, to use the
that mid-level? Takes them out of the tax. Yeah, they would be a full mid-level team at that point. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's, now you're putting $30 million on your books for 23-24. Might yeah. actually also, also John, might actually make him more tradable this year if he doesn't yeah. have that massive $47 million number for this year where it's just so hard to match salary.
Makes it, well, if he does, if you do that and change it to 2x30, it's pretty easy to trade him for Gordon Hayward, huh?
Now, is it, from his perspective, like, is it really worth doing that?
To get traded to Charlotte?
Well, yeah, and just to get, you know, to add $13 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
To your overall ledger, I'm thinking probably not. I'm sure yeah. he thinks he'll get more than $13 million this offseason. He might be yeah. wrong, but then at least you also have your freedom as well. So, and he's made so yeah. much money, it's probably not worth it for him to do something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, let's get to Phoenix here. Devin Booker is eligible for that same $205 million over 4 years as Karl Anthony Towns. I think you offer that.
Pay the man.
Just hope he takes it.
Yep.
The player option will probably be on there. You're just going to give up the full boat.
Yep.
Like he's gotten better every year. It's just that's just what's going to happen. So that's pretty easy. They also could possibly extend Jay Crowder. I don't think they're going to want to do that. You know, he makes $10 million this year. They, you know, they could in theory offer him up to that Josh Richardson 4 years, 58. But he's old enough here where, you know, would he be willing to do something along more along the lines of these Covington Beverly type of
yeah.
extensions? Just go out for the same money another couple of years.
I would I would definitely do something like that with Crowder where I go out,
yeah.
you know, maybe a maximum of 2 years, let's say, at, you know, the step up from the $10 million he makes now.
Still be tradable.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is his age 32 season coming up, but that number would be, it'd be okay transitioning him into kind of a backup role by the end of that. Cam Johnson would be the starter, but they still need, you know, that's a reasonable amount to be paying your third forward.
Yeah.
All right, who else we got to talk about here?
Harrison Barnes. We skipped right over him with Sacramento, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. He's eligible for a four-year extension, $98.7 million.
I would probably do that.
Wow.
You would not?
Well, so Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, he's, you know what? He's older than I thought.
Yeah, 31 to 34, age 31 to 34 seasons, starting him at 22. Now, maybe you could, if you wanted to do something that was like, you know, start at 22, stay flat, maybe even decline. They like their declining contracts in Sacramento, although Cantnell is gone now, so maybe not anymore. But
if you went 3 years and a, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, that's what, maybe 2 years, 3 years. Yeah. Especially if you could get him to do 2 years and then trade him. But I think he probably would be of the impression that, yeah, I mean, is he really going to get more than $20 million a year in the open market? You think he's going to get, he's not going to get 4 years, $80 million as a free agent next year.
I don't think he's going to get those kind of years as a 31-year-old free agent.
The teams that are interested in him are probably going to be teams that are trying to win, not teams that are going to have cap space necessarily. Sign-in trades can get difficult because you have to send back salary unless you have a trade exception. So, yeah, I mean, I might actually make that offer to him. He probably becomes more tradable if you just – now, he makes 18 in the last year of his deal. So, you know, could you do a 3-year extension at 19 a year? Would he consider that? Would that make it more tradable, or 2-year extension, second, a third year partial guarantee?
Right. Something like that, because then you do that extension and then you do that early enough in the summer where you can still move him at the trade deadline potentially. And then he has out years that seem like okay to the team that's receiving him, if they're a contender especially. I think that's probably the right move for Sac.
Yeah, no, I agree. And speaking of skipped over, Fred VanVleet is another one going back to Toronto, where he is that player option for next year. If he opts out of that, he could get 4 years, $114.2 million.
I think he's probably going to play this one out.
You think you get more than that? Like, obviously?
Yeah. I think he could.
So this would be his age 29 through 33 season, small guard. And he did make the All-Star team, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah,
shot I just a think he has high 44% on twos.
I just think the way like Kyle Lowry has aged has, I think, made people a little more willing, like, to, because he's not a speed guy. He's more a guy who's like a bowling ball. So I think there's a sense that maybe those guys will age a little better.
All due respect to Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry was way, way better than Brian.
there is that. You know, he's a guy who historically has kind of gone for the short contracts and played things out too, and kind of, you know, believed in betting on himself. So I expect him to do that one more time, try to get the biggest bag possible this coming summer. And hopefully Nick Nurse doesn't run him into the freaking ground in the meantime.
Yeah, that's another potential concern. Yeah, I mean, 4 years, 114, you know, average annual salary in like 28. I mean, that's pretty good. Like so you would offer that as Toronto for sure?
Yeah, I would. Because I just think like that's going to be a movable contract for a while.
Yeah, I guess my concern is where, if you get to free agency, what is the team that's going to offer you $30 million a year? Like, do you think he's not going to get more than $30 million a year for over 4 years free agency, right? I mean, that would be...
I think if he has another year like he had last year, yeah, I think he might be getting that.
But like, where's the leverage going to come from, though, of a team that's going to have $30 million in cap space where he would rather be than Toronto? I mean, to me, I think like, yeah, you know what? You might get 15 or 20 million more guaranteed if you play it out. I don't think you're going to get it from a superior destination. Maybe you can force Toronto to pay that. I would very seriously consider taking if I were him. And especially if I could get like a player option on the end or something like that.
Right, right. Huh.
Like to me, and I'm more risk averse than a lot of these guys, but to me, I would say, hey, if we're talking about me making another 15 million, 20 million over a 4 year period, why don't I just lock in now and also just lock in being somewhere where I want to be? And then OG Anunoby actually could extend in theory as well, amazingly enough. He would be eligible for 3 years, 72 million. He would have to go out, it's 2 years from now, and then he would decline his player option for 18 million.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty easy one for him to turn down. I think he's in pretty good position to get paid.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would, you would make that that offer is Toronto. It's just, to me, it's hard for, and maybe with the cap going up, I should just be adjusting for inflation a little bit more, but it's hard for 3-and-D type of guys to get paid more than, you know, kind of, I mean, Mikhail Bridges is like the ultimate of that guy, and he just got $20 million a year. So but I think he thinks he can be more too. That might be the genesis of some of these rumors that he may, I don't know right. if he wants out, but might be looking for more opportunity, let's say.
I think people are really intrigued by OG, even like more than they were by Bridges, just because with OG's body, he can play 3, 4 and even 5. Like he just, he lets you be such a chameleon, especially when you get to a playoff situation. So I think there's going to be a lot of interest in him. If he hits unrestricted free agency, it could be someone just says, damn the Torpedoes, we'll pay him the max, even if we're overpaying. Cause like you get in those situations with free agency too, or it could just be where he has a lot of interest and then Toronto has to shell out more.
Yeah. And now to be clear, in the first year that this extension would kick in, the 7-to-9-year max would be $39.3 million. So I don't know if he would get that max necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you could get $30 million a year. But again, for that player type, you know, if you're a rebuilding team and just look at the teams that have had cap space the last 2 or 3 years, you're going to shell out $30 million a year for, you know, a 28-year-old 3-and-D type of wing when you're not ready to win yet?
Jeremy Grant would tell you yes. Paid,
right? Yeah. Yeah, not every, you know, is there some team that has like a GM that's had a relationship with OG Anunoby going back to like when he was in middle school or something? Yeah. No, I agree with you that it probably plays out that way, but it also doesn't seem like a no-brainer to not take it. Particularly, again, if you could get a player option on the end of this extension when you're still would only be, you know, in your late 20s and could get paid again. And let's not forget, too, he's got a torn ACL in his past. He doesn't have a totally clean bill of health.
That's true. Yeah, it was from college in Indiana, but yes.
Who else we need to talk about here? Warriors?
What do we got in Golden State? Oh, we got actually a couple interesting ones. Andrew Wiggins, amazingly, I would probably try to extend him if I was Golden State.
Yeah, now the question is, what is the price? He'll be making 33.6 this upcoming season. They're in a situation where they're good and they don't have anyone else in that role. Maybe they think Kuminga could grow into that. He seems like more of a four to me. Like, and I don't see Kuminga as like a get over screens type of guy necessarily. So we just don't know what he's going to be yet. So you'd want, but you still definitely want to pay Wiggins something that you think might be tradable and wouldn't be too bad. You know, he's going to say, hey, in theory, we just won a championship or we made it to the finals. Like, I don't want to take a pay cut.
Yeah.
But I still think 33.6 is a little high for him. Again, going back to what 3-and-D type of players are worth. And he's proven himself to be close to the top of that list, although maybe not quite as reliable as a spot up guy. So, but he has more value to the Warriors than other teams, which was part of why that was such a brilliant trade in the end. I don't know. What's a fair offer?
3 times 30?
Man, boy, that's Joe Lacob. They had $100 million in gate receipts.
That's the reason I'm saying this. You don't care about spending a little more, clearly, and you can't lose him.
Well, here's the thing, though. Again, going back to the same thing I was talking about with OG, you're going to have full board rights on him. You go to free agency, you see how it goes, see how he plays next year, see how Kuminga develops. I probably would not want to extend him unless it was a pretty significant discount, you know, in like the $25 million sort of range. Like anything above that, I think I just play it out because, again, where else is Andrew Wiggins going to get paid $30 million next summer? Like, it's just not
going to happen. Minnesota.
As I was saying, it's not going to happen, right? So to me, I think just with the lack of cap space around the league, like this isn't 2016 where anybody could just pay him $30 million. Like you're going to have priorities and he doesn't really fit on a rebuilding team. So I think you play it out and bring him back on something fair. And also, I mean, the Warriors, they've really only ever lost during this period one free agent that they wanted to retain, which was KD. Everyone else they've paid them and they've come back. I don't think they have the fear of negotiating with him as he goes into free agency, particularly again because I'm just not sure what the landing spot's going to be above, you know, $20 million a year in cap space for some other team or whatever. Draymond's another interesting one. He can actually opt out after next season.
Yeah.
He signed that extension, which I thought was a very good deal for both sides. You know, would he want to just go out a little bit further? He also has a player option the following year for 27. I think I also probably, as Golden State, would hold the line unless he wanted to do maybe just like one more year on what he has. Even then, I probably wouldn't necessarily want to do it. I think he's another one where it's just like, okay, where are you going as a 33-year-old? I think that's what it would be.
I think this is his age 33 season, I think, coming up. I think he's going to be that 24-25 season. If you're talking about adding on that,
this will be his age 32 season coming up here. So Basketball Reference, which does it as of February 1st.
Okay.
So yeah, so you're looking at an age 33 season, $27 million. Hard to see him necessarily beating that. This is also one where they can just go into the year as well. I think doing it this offseason wouldn't necessarily make much sense either. I think I probably would just hold the line on these guys for now, unless they're really willing to offer a discount if I'm Golden State. I don't feel a great need here. Draymond also had this back injury during the year. That's a concern. So
You do worry about him with the age and everything. Where's the rival offer coming from, I think, is a fair question. And you do have that time on the backside. He has the player option, but you can negotiate all through the spring because that player option's sitting out there next year. So I think you're right. You probably play that out. You might, if you could do the Joe Ingles with him, like one more year at 25 to 27, you might look at that. I think otherwise you play it out.
So that's his age 34 season on after the player option. I mean, the player option to me kind of, that's the thing that makes it a little bit more difficult, right? Like if his contract just ended next year and you wanted to extend him out for maybe one or two more years, that might make some sense. But yeah, again, it's just like where he's a franchise icon, but also you're just like, where else is he going to go when you have full bird rights on him, and he's such a good fit there too. It's just hard for me to see another team that he doesn't want to go to fucking Orlando or something. So I think both with Wiggins and with Green, the organization, if they do make it to free agency, would have substantial leverage, I would say.
I think you're probably right there.
All right. Well, so we still have a few left here. Why don't we call it for today, and we can get back to, we still got to do more of our most interesting free agents of the offseason next week, and we can finish up with this as well. So thanks so much for listening. A reminder that today and for all of the Boston Finals games, Danny and I will be on Playback. There'll be a link to that in the show description, where you just sign with your cable provider. You can just watch the game with our commentary, but you also get the sound. It's all in one window. There's no syncing up or anything like that. You can subscribe to my podcast, Dunked On Prime. Also a link to that in the show notes if you want a daily podcast that's talking about even more minutia than John and I can get into with our once a week. And what did you write about for The Athletic this week, John?
Did my free agent valuations, my top 25 free agents for this coming off season, and what my formula says they are worth for the coming year.
Awesome. Yeah, I was starting to make my way through that this morning. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about some of those valuations in a future show.
Absolutely.
I'll talk to you all then.